All right, so we're going to get started now. We're on Daf Lamed Amud Aleph at the beginning of the new chapter, which is also the beginning of the new Mishnah, which is also the beginning of a new chapter. And we're going to, believe it or not, we're going to learn the whole chapter tonight. Okay, so 30A, Lamed Amud Aleph. Amar Lahen HaMemuneh. So they've already done now, they've done the first stage of the preparing the Beit HaMikdash, preparing everything for the sacrifices. So Marla Mimuna, so the person who's in charge, Bo Hafisu, so they get ready. Now they're going to do a lottery. The lottery's going to be, they already did the lottery to figure out who's going to shovel off the altar. Now we're going to have everything else. So they're going to have this lottery. Mia Shochet, Mia Zorek, Mia Medashen, Mizbeach HaPnimi. Who's going to slaughter the Korban Tamid? Who's going to throw its blood on the Mizbeach? Who's gonna shovel out the ash from the incense altar? Mimad Hashem Tamidara, who's gonna clean out the ash from the menorah? Mimale Evarim Lakavesh, and who's gonna bring the limbs of the korban tamid up the ramp? So they're talking about the animal here. So just to briefly, this mifaresh, right? The commentary on the side has just an observation where it is. Where is it? Harosh veRegel b'Kohen Echad. It just points out that this is actually Mafkina Mikra Shisha Kohanim, that there are actually six Kohanim who are going to be involved in the bringing of the animal. These are the different parts and the different groups that would take it up. So Harosh veRegel Shel Yamin, so the head and the hind right leg, Ushtei Adayim, and the two front legs, Oketz veRegel Shel Smol, and then the butt and the left hind leg. So then like the trunk of the animal, and then the two sides, hakravaim, and the innards. And so those, it counted, those would be six kohanim would take all of that. And then and then you had other people taking the flour and the grain offerings and the wine libation. So they would do the lottery and everyone won. Okay, so they would, you know, whoever won would go and do that. Okay. Okay. Amar lehen zuru imigiyaz man shchita. So the guy, the person in charge would go and say, you know, take a look, see if the time for offering the korban has arrived. I mean, we're still like before sunrise. We're still in the very, very early of the day. So imigiya harava omer barkai. So if it's now light enough, that light is starting to come up off over the horizon. So the person who's like, I guess someone standing high who can see out will say, oh, Barkai, you know, there's a light. But Matya ben Shmuel omer, he'ir pnei kol ha-mizrach ad shu b'chavron. And I guess Matya ben Shmuel, he was oftentimes when he would like ask again, he would say, has the light reached Chevron? Omer hein? And he would answer, yes. So then he would say, okay, so if the light has come, so now go get the animal, the lamb to offer as the korban. The little piece here about the chevron in the Mishnah, not published here, but like when they're published as a Mishnah, the commentary of the Bartanura just points out that the reason chevron is there's no real value to saying chevron. It's just that because the avot are buried in chevron, so you want to just like every day to like bring up the existence of the avot. So that's why Matya ben Shmuel would bring that up. Anyway, so it continues here. So they would say, okay, so light enough so we can start the process. So go and get the lamb, go and get the korban that we're going to offer. And so there was the area where all the animals were kept was in the northwestern corner. There were actually, in fact, four different chambers there. One was this where the animals were kept. One was the chamber of the seals, which is where people would go, and if they had a, they would pay the kohanim, whoever was there, to get like a little coin, and that coin sort of like lahavdil, like in an arcade, like you'd pay the coin, you'd pay your quarters to get a coin, and then you use that coin to redeem it for whatever. Flour or whatever libations that you needed. So you would just pay in location A, you'd get the coin, and then you would take it to location B and then exchange, so that this guy was dealing only with money and coins and this guy was dealing with just with coins and the actual offerings, so things didn't get messed up. So that was what this chamber was used for. Again, lahavdil. What? What's that?
Why is that necessary? Why was that necessary?
I think it just kept things more orderly and organized, that you would stop over here to get the coins, that people weren't like walking around with like loose change trying to fumble around, and people are waiting to get like, oh, you can deal with that over there. You get your token, then you just go straight there, easy exchange. And then there were like, each token had a different word on it that would indicate what you were offering and what you needed from there. It just streamlined things, I guess, a little bit better. And then one chamber was the chamber where there was the big bonfire that we mentioned already in the first chapter. And one chamber was, the fourth one was where they made the lechem apanim, right, the showbread. So then he goes into a different chamber where the kelim, where the vessels were kept. And they would bring out of there a grand total of 93 different vessels that were going to be used in the service of the day. There's, I think, the Mefarish here. I'm trying to find out where he says it. But there's the number 93 is a symbolic number representing something in particular. The number of times I think Shem Hashem comes up in a particular nevuah. I don't remember where I read that. I'm not seeing it here in the Mefarish, but I do believe that someone does make that suggestion. I don't see it here, so. I don't know. Oh, okay. This Gemara is running out of space, so I think the Mefarish continues elsewhere. Okay, so, okay, wherever it is, so there is some significance to the number 93. Hishkotz Tamid Bekos Shel Zahav, and they would feed the Tamid, they'd feed the, and we've heard this idea already, they would feed him from a golden cup, right? And then, you know, some say that's actually literally a golden cup. Some say, no, it's not really a golden cup, but they would just, you know, they said it was golden as an exaggeration. Okay. The Gemara continues, or the Mishnah continues, Afal Pishu Mevukar Mi Ba'erev Mevakurin Oto La'orav Vipot. So even though he had already been checked, right, the previous night, they'd already checked all the animals, and they knew that this one was blemish-free. Still, even so, now it's in the morning, they're going to check it again. You know, hold their torches, obviously not, you know, singeing the animal, but just holding their torches up to be able to look at the animal to make sure that it is indeed blemish-free. Misha Zacha B'tishun Mizbeach Haptimi B'tishan HaMenara Ayum Aktimin B'dalikin B'yadam. So the ones who were who won the lottery for clearing off the ash on the incense altar and for the menorah, so they would go in with four different vessels in their hands. Hateni ve'akuz v'shnei maftachot. So they'd have like this a pail, a basket, kuz like a jar, and two keys. Hateni domeh l'tarkav shel zahav machzik kabayim v'chetzi. So this teni was the It was this basket, like a golden basket that held 2.5 kav. For reference, yeah, no, never mind. Something else. The akuz de mele kiton gadol shel zahav, and this kuz was just like a big golden pitcher. Ushte mavtachot, and then the two keys. Achad shu yored be amad hashechi shnei. Okay, I just lost a. Something's not right here. There are two keys. One of them would go down in, it would literally would like reach his arm from his arm to his armpit. We're gonna see exactly how he opens a door, but there was one that was like the way you would turn the key, you'd have to stick your hand through this whole hole in the door to sort of turn it, and that's this one key. And then there's another, where is this? And then there was a second key that was turned more directly. I'm not sure what's going on here with this particular page. Okay, but there was an additional one. There was a second key that's just not mentioned here right now, but it was earlier. Okay. I'm a little lost right here in the where this is on the Gemara. But okay, we'll still continue. So there were the two keys. There was the one that went all the way in, and there was the one that was just more directly. And the big gate, that entrance into the Heichal, had two little doors, one on the northern side and one on the southern side. And the one on the south, was no one ever actually walked through it. And this is on the basis of the verse in Sefer Yechezkel. That Hashem says, this gate is closed, Lo yipate lo sagur ye lo yipateach ish al yavobo ki Hashem Elokei Yisrael babo v'haya sagur. Right, the prophet says this door shall be closed. No one's going to go through it because this is the gate. This is the door that Hashem Himself, as it were to go through. So no human can go through this. So that one remain closed. Natal ta mafteach v'tachat afish pesh nichnas lehatava nehatal haichal ad shemegiel l'shar hakatol. So he would go through this first gate, this first door, and that's when he would have this sort of deep, reach his arm in to sort of to unlock the door. He'd go through that first door, and he would enter into the small little chamber area, and then from there go in another one into the Heichal actually itself. Ad shemegiel l'shar hagadol, till he gets to the big gate there. Hegiel l'shar hagadol, he'avir et hanagar. And then once he gets to the big gate, so then he opens it from the inside. He moves the wooden cross beam that was keeping it locked in the locks. He unlocks it from the inside and opens the door. And the person whose job was it to slaughter the korban would not do any slaughtering until he heard the sound of the door actually being opened into the Heichal, into the inner parts of the Kodesh and the Kodesh Kadeshim, the inner parts of the Beit HaMikdash. And then it just continues, Miracho, Hayushamin, Kol Shar Gadol, and Shniftach. The Mishnah is saying that actually, in fact, they could hear the sound. It was a very loud sound. Even as far as Jericho, they'd be able to hear it. And then it tells us a couple other things. Yericho Hayushamin Kol Magrifa. From Yericho, they would hear the sound of the Magrifa. It was like an instrument. Yericho Hayushamin Kol Ashir. They would hear the sound of the Levim, I think, singing. Yericho Hayushamin Kol Ben Arza Makish Bat Zilzal. They would hear this again, another instrument they could hear from Jericho. Yericho Hayushamin Kol Achalil. They could hear another instrument from Jericho. Yericho Hayushamin Kol Gvini Karuz. They would hear another. Like they were hearing all these things happening in the Beit HaMikdash. They could hear it as far as Jericho. It's interesting that in the previous daf we had talked about different times that the rabbis used exaggerations or not. These none of these were mentioned. So if this were exaggeration, you would have expected it to sort of be included among the exaggerations. So it sounds like they're understanding this literally, that the sound actually carried that far. This we saw earlier also. They could hear the sound of that like wooden contraption opening up when we saw at the very beginning, when he would go into the Beit HaMikdash and go towards the water, to the Kior, and there was a wooden contraption that he would turn and move in order to raise the water up, and the people would wait until they heard that noise. So here, apparently, that noise was actually traveled very far. They could hear that even in Yericho. Yericho Yoshamea Kol Shofar. They could also hear the shofar being blown there. Yoshamim Av Kol Shel Kohen Gadol B'Shashu Mazkir Et Shem B'Yom Kibrim. There are those who said they could even hear the sound of Hashem's name when the Kohen Gadol would pronounce it on Yom Kippur. So the sound was traveling very far to Yericho. And it sounds again like these are all to be taken literally because these weren't listed as the figurative exaggerations. They could even smell the incense offering from there. Rabbi Elazar ben Diglai, Rabbi Elazar ben Diglai says, Yizim hayu la'abal be'arei ha'michbar, v'imit atsho b'mereach pitu maktoret. So I had these goats, where my dad had goats in this Arei Michvar, outside of far from the Beit HaMikdash, and they would sneeze every time the Ketoret, every time the incense was offered, they'd sneeze because the scent of it would make all the way to them, and they would sneeze from it. Okay, continuing, Misha Zacha B'Tamid Meshacho, whoever won the right to slaughter the Tamid would bring it. Havolach B'Veit Amid B'Chaim, Misha Zachu B'Verim Hochinimo. So they would bring it to these the slaughterhouse area. And the people who were going to bring the limbs up to the altar, they would go with him. That was on the northern end of the Mizbeach. So, and in that slaughterhouse area, there were eight little stations, short little pillars, and on them were these square cedar blocks. And on those square cedar blocks were these iron hooks. The Gimel Sidarim, the Chol Echad V'Echad. And every one of them had like three levels of these hooks. So if you had any animal that you were going to flay its skin off, so you would just, depending if it was a small animal, you hung it lower. If it was a bigger animal, you hung it higher. You'd have these three different levels to use. They would hang the animal there to flay the skin off of it. And from the slaughterhouse area here. This is where they would hang them and flay them. And they would have the animal, the meat, rest on these marble tables that were there next to each one of these little pillars. And whoever was it who won the lottery to clear off the incense altar, he would go in there with this basket and he would spoon out and take out all the ash that was left over there. Whatever was left at the very end, he would just, again, sort of sweep it into that basket to totally clear it off. He'd put it down, and he would leave. Whoever it was who won the right to open up the, to clear the ash out of the menorah, Dolkin. So he would go and he would find these two easternmost candles were still burning in the morning. He would still find them still lit. So we do the other five of the seven, he would clear out the ash from it. If he found that those first two, those ones were still, were actually went out, he would clear the ash out of them, relight them, he would relight it from whatever was still burning. Then he would clean out the rest of them. But those two always needed to remain burning. And there was this stone that was in front of the menorah. There were actually three steps on it. He would not stand on the ground. It was much too big. He would walk up the three steps and stand on the top step in order to clean out the ash from the menorah. And then he would leave the jug, this pitcher, he'd leave on the second step of the yatsa, and then he would leave. And that concludes the third chapter of Masechet Tamid, again talking about cleaning up of the ash and how they would get the Beit HaMikdash all ready to go. They already now are starting. They're already preparing now that Korban Tamid to offer. So we've already gotten into the day. We're already now after daybreak. So we've made it to daybreak. And the next chapter, we'll continue with more of this, moving through the process and the procedure of the Korban Tamid.